obscenity thing, Lee, was directed toward offenses really against children. And we're confining this discussion to the effect upon children.
You're not going to be able to do it.
You aren't going to run into that problem. You said, well, it was directed to the adults.
You're going to put a nude picture out in front of your house, and you get arrested because you're purveying that or displaying that to minors. I don't think it's going to hold up, because if the general public's going by there, you can argue that I wasn't. So
let's forget it.
Well, that's all I really
want
to do.
Just
want to bring it up.
Yeah, I want to disorder the town. You're going to have a lot, rather than just aim it at minors. I can put out a great big sign across the bridge. I mean, you're going to have some people disturbing. Why?
Do we have indecent exposure any place?
I wonder why.
Better know this really late. Okay.
Is there any, there's a motion been made that you wish to have a vote on that, Frank?
Yeah, let's go ahead and have
it. What's your motion, Frank?
That the staff draw some the section to come under this endangering welfare of minor on the public display of obscenity where minors would like to
see. Can I speak?
Yes.
Well, now, it seems to me, Frank, that Roger's got a good point. If you think this is an evil of some sort that we need to cover, I think since you're not going to be able to establish that this is endangering just minors or what you're concerned with is an offensive display of some sort, then why couldn't we handle it? Since we've already taken care of abusive or obscene language and obscene gestures, I mean, it seems to me that would be the place.
That's fine. I think that's what we need to do.
I'm not arguing for you.
I believe many of us are very excited about Frank's motion.
But I think that's where it should go rather than here. I mean,
watch,
that,
I motion's going to lose anyway.
Okay.
I don't care whether it's here in the disorderly context.
What you're saying is you're not in a very turgid state over his motion. You're not in a very turgid condition over his motion.
Call roll on the motion.
Judge Burns?
No.
Senator
Burns?
No.
Chandler? No.
Clark?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Knight?
Yes.
Spaulding?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
You knew you were safe.
Motion has failed. Well, now I do think we should cover this other one. I've got some language here. It's vague, but I think it conveys the intention. I mean, it's sub 6. Knowingly leaves unattended in or at any place a child less than blank years of age for such a period of time as may endanger the health, physical or mental health or safety of such a child.
As may endanger, be lengthened for
a day. Might be to endanger the, why should you say health or welfare of the child? Let's just say health or welfare of the child.
What are you looking for?
I'm going to look under our reckless with endangering.
See the point.
While we're waiting, I can't understand why it's bad to permit a person less than 18 years of age to enter or remain in a place where unlawful narcotic or dangerous drug activity is carrying on. But it's
got
to be 21 years of age before it harms you to be in a, you can be anywhere, you can be 3 years older and it still harms you to be in a place where there's gambling. It seems to me if we're going to draw those two distinctions, maybe ought to reverse it.
Well, no. Four is the good
cell. No, I'm talking about three. Two and three.
Yeah, him and there's
two is 18. And three is 21, and I suspect that if anything, I'd reverse them. Otherwise, I'd put them the same age.
Mr. Chairman, Roger and I were talking about this at noon, too, and this is going to come up. And there is kind of an inconsistency, I think, that tends to cause more confusion among people of that age. And
why don't we say 21, unless the voters have already approved the age, voting age 19 and 1970.
One problem we've had is that we generally agreed throughout the code on the age of 18 in relation to these crimes. But on two of the subsections here, as to gambling and liquor, we are tied by the other regulatory codes.
Why?
What other regulatory?
Well, because, for example, the racing code on pari mutuel gambling, it's the age of 21 in Oregon. In other words, the only legal gambling you can engage in Oregon, you have to be at least 21. And it's a crime under that chapter, which I believe is 421, for example, to permit anyone under 21 to bet and pair legal gambling and sell them a ticket.
And you wanted to cover that by this?
We want to conform to the age here, to the age that's established for legalized gambling. Mm-hmm. And the same problem is with the liquor, because our liquor control law charges at the age 21,
but
legally,
for
the
notions of rain. Well, it wouldn't be inconsistent, would it, to prohibit a 20-year-old kid from betting at the Fair Mutual, but at the same time not make it unlawful to induce anybody betting.
By the way, it doesn't have any, subsection 3 doesn't have anything to do with paramount.
Well, Roger's got a point there. I think both Roger and Chandler are right.
I'm what?
18 and 21 years. If the liquor laws and the gambling laws related to 21 and the drugs and the rest of it to 18, we might cause some problems if we were at this point to make them both the same.
I think we ought to make it 21 and wait and see what happens with the Constitution. It's 21 throughout.
Well, make it 18.
You know, if the 19-year-old vote passes, unquestionably the legislature is going to change everything, liquor and everything to conform.
We've compiled a list,
but it ain't,
we think, is fairly complete, that tries to show all of the statutes in ORS that would be affected if you attempted to have a uniform age throughout ORS.
It's not
in this.
Need another commission.
We do have a listing of those statutes.
Is it theoretically possible to do that?
Well, you can pass a statute. In fact,
take about an 80-page statute.
Well, you'd have a funny thing though on paramutual betting in one place, and then this here saying 18.
Mr. Chairman, I move we change the age to 21 throughout, and take another look at it after the
next round. You mean throughout this whole section, including the tobacco?
Yep. Including tobacco?
That's upset.
You know,
I'll go for moving them all to 18. I don't care.
I quit chewing when I was 18.
It's going to be consistent one way or the other.
I started earlier, but it doesn't,
you're not illegal for consuming it. It was the guy that was selling it to
me. I thought we repealed that law and making it illegal to sell tobacco under 18.
No, it wasn't repealed. This section, as I recall, the first draft,
used to be minor.
Didn't only apply to sale.
Yeah.
Apply to the purchase.
Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to make them all 18 or make them all 21?
All 21.
Well, one problem you have there, for example, on subsection 1, we'd be saying, in effect, that the age of consent to have sexual intercourse is 18, but it's against the law for them to watch it, but it's all right for them to do it.
They keep their eyes closed.
Okay.
Good point.
Yeah, better than pork.
Mr. Chairman, I believe we have the age 18 consistent throughout.
Why do you have this
back?
Is there a policy behind that?
I don't know. A subcommittee chairman, is there a policy?
Because it's in the statutes now.
Well, I'm going to suggest that this is one of the areas where criminal law is made trivial and is brought into disrepute. Everyone knows that it's not enforced. Youngsters especially look at the older generation as a bunch of hypocrites anyhow. This is another place they'll say, well, they want to smoke their cigarettes, but they don't want us to smoke them. It's ridiculous.
I think that's true.
You mean on tobacco?
Yeah,
on
tobacco.
Right.
I think that's a good point.
I meant by a motion.
You'd never make it in River City.
The thing is, of course, Don
Paylette.
The staff agrees with this, but we felt that this should be a commission decision because, not just a subcommittee decision, but because right now, when tobacco and the use of cigarettes is in such disrepute, and there's so many health programs and all the advertising on, don't smoke, don't smoke, keep in mind,
that it seems a little incongruous then to start weakening out the laws that prohibit the sale to minors.
I think that's really recognizing that that other area is a more legitimate way to attack a serious health problem.
Question.
The same way the law about notary is.
Why the hell should we sanction the cigar store operator who sells a 12-year-old kid a pack of cigarettes?
How
else
should we sanction
him?
Well,
we're not
doing
anything. We're not enforcing
it. If it was
enforced,
I'd be
a good thing. We know that you can go in your county courthouse hallway and stick 35 cents in the slot machine and get these cigarettes.
So it says no minors are allowed. What's the motion?
The motion is
I don't know.
Change the age throughout the 21 and delete section 5.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to move to amend. I'm going to move to amend to limit the motion to subsection 2.
Oh, on age.
Yeah, because I think Don's argument is correct. You can't have any more age. You say it's the age of consent is 18, and then say you can't watch it.
I'll withdraw my motion in favor of Mr. Johnson's motion.
Your motion, Bob Chandler's motion has been withdrawn. The motion now is that sub 2 be changed from 18 to 21 years. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Clark.
Could I just ask a question? Would it do great harm if we were to make it 18 throughout? Would that alter any Oregon law now or anything?
Well, yeah. I think essentially, other than the control of the Liquor Commission, essentially you would be lowering the drinking age to 18. Now, I may think that's desirable, but I don't think it makes much sense for this commission to take on that issue.
They could certainly buy.
Lower the
that's
what playing the horses at Portland Meadows age to 18.
You heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed no.
That's lawful gambling activity, and this talks to being unlawful. It's lawful out there.
No, it's unlawful under another state statute.
Under 18.
For anybody under 21.
Yeah, but he's talking about this statute talks about unlawful.
Yeah, but that's unlawful.
I think we've done about as much as we can do on this.
Are we going to add something?
Yes.
If I ask a question, I apologize for perhaps discussing why I wasn't here, but on subsection 4, our present statute says makes available, and that is not in the statute. Is it someplace else now, or is there some reason you've taken out that makes available? I'm thinking of a circumstance where a guy brings a six-pack of beer at a department where he knows that his minor son's going to be, and he's going to bring some friends here, and he puts it out with the intent and purpose that it'll be there in case these kids want to come and use it.
That's either given or sold.
Well, it's pretty difficult. A lot of courts do. The misjudge has
given or sold. We have to come. Well, I think we're going to have to amend that.
Well, I think this section would be 8% of the market.
Which one?
Subsection 4.
But, I just continue to read.
First case I had in the DA's office, prosecuting the strike for this, was tried at the court, the judge, banned the case, that's it. Mr. Burns.
We would violate that
word
first.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree. I'm finding guilty and suspended in
the did you move then, so that would read gives or sells, comma, delete the or, causes to be given or sold, comma, and then or makes available.
Or otherwise makes available.
Or otherwise makes available.
Does that mean, though, that you're going to have to prosecute?
I mean,
in this section, we have
Let's use
Brinches.
Yeah,
that's
what?
Let's
use
Brinches.
Say, gives.
Well,
our statute now says Brinches or otherwise makes available. You get the situation where you get a place, and every now and then you have problems. Beer is there, it's brought there, the young kids coming in, and now nobody is really in state the person in charge in the place at least is making it available.
It's not an uncommon thing for parents to make a case of booze on the kitchen table the night of the high school graduation party, the part of the premises, our part of the week.
And one kid in our part of the week got killed when he's riding home for a party like that, too.
Well, that's a problem.
Gotten killed,
that's right. That's a problem with it.
Three of my McBurns dead and by my clients. Truck. One super truck.
Yeah, but they weren't drinking brews.
Oh, I got here!
You were involved in that case. You were playing for that, weren't you?
Well, you've heard the motion. Does the staff understand it?
No. Gives us the conduct, causes to be given, so or otherwise makes it.
Right.
Or furnishes or otherwise makes available, I believe is what he...
No, he didn't say furnishes. Or otherwise makes available. I think it's the same.
Oh, there.
Yes. Yeah, probably would be better not to use furnishes since we've defined that term in our obscenity article. And it includes loaning.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carry.
No. I abstain on that.
Now, what if we add a subsection 6, which says, knowingly leaves unattended in or at any place a child less than 8 years of age for such period of time as may be likely to endanger the health or welfare of such child.
You
is that too vague?
You want to use 8?
8?
Shouldn't that be a separate section? Because this applies to, this really, most of this section deals with people who are not parents or guardians.
I think it should be a separate section. I think it should be called child neglect. And I think that it should follow... I think it should be
new section 5.
And except for that change, topical in nature, I would move the Atturi amendment.
I think it is better in a separate section.
Second the motion.
You've heard the motion. Call the roll. Staff to prepare a new section 5.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
Aye.
Johnson.
Aye.
Mike.
Aye.
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 Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Just one moment, Lee. Right after somebody moves the adoption of Section 8 is amended.
I did.
You mean Section 5 and 8?
Second. They left it in. All right. Call the roll on the approval of Section 8 is amended.
Judge Burns.
Aye.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Oh, I thought we got the Section 5 out of there, and I was going to vote against it with it in there.
I thought we had it out.
Yeah,
I did too.
No, no. Section 5
he put it back in. Is it out?
The child neglect statute.
No, that's child neglect. It's tobacco. Not sub 5.
Sub 5
is tobacco.
Tobacco.
I don't think it's tobacco.
I thought it was deleted.
It was in my motion. And then when I withdrew my motion, it was not Johnson's motion. That's I asked specifically if he wanted a motion, he didn't.
I moved to strike it.
Well, we're in the middle of a roll call, Mr. Chairman. I suggest we rescind the roll call.
I understood Lee Johnson say, why should we approve of some fellow in a tobacco shop selling cigarettes to a 12-year-old kid?
That's right. That's right, and he left 5 in then, specifically.
All I was trying to do, though, was to give the question.
If there's no objection, the chair will order that subsection 5 has been stricken. And call the roll. Very well. Let's. That motion has been voted on, deletion of sub 5.
Has been voted on?
Has not.
Yeah. Somebody want to move it? I don't know.
I'll move it on the grounds that Don stated. I think we're...
Chandler moves sub 5 be deleted.
What kind of ridiculous...
Call the roll.
No, you don't want to move it.
No,
Judge
I don't.
Well, then how can you move it?
Well, how can you move it?
I've moved it so that it can be beaten.
Oh, all right. Call the roll.
Sandra Burns.
Aye.
Aye. Chandler.
No.
Clark.
Aye.
Johnson.
No.
Chandler got me confused because he made the motion.
You want to vote no?
No.
She's four. Your pocket vote.
No.
Well, I know which way I want to vote. I just don't know whether yes or no.
Now, may we call the roll on Section 8 is amended. That failed. 4-3.
All right, Hedgeburn.
Aye.
Chandler.
Aye.
Clark.
No.
Johnson.
Aye.
Knight.
Aye.
Spaulding.
Aye.
Aye. Carried. Now, General Johnson, you have a statement to make.
I'd just like to inquire to the chair. Do you intend to go late this afternoon? I'd like to call my spouse.
Well, we probably will. I think you might tell one of the girls to call your spouse. Why don't you? Then we can go right on.
Okay, but do we intend to go late?
Spouse. Yes.
I move we approve the second.
We get through, don't we?
Move we approve the draft on offenses against the family amendment. If we have
before we do this,
I would like to ask a question. As far as the offenses against the family type things, there's only one thing that I can just think about the top of my head to be completely deleted, which I agree with, and that's loose cohabitation.
How's that?
Is there anything else in the present law that has been deleted?
Yeah, we've got, and we really should, I think, Mr. Chairman, discuss some of these other areas that are mentioned in the commentary that we have not provided for in this draft. And if you'll look at page 30 of your draft, there's supplemental commentary there discussing some of these areas that you may want to take a second look at.
Yeah. Is this all the ones we struck out here?
Yeah, family, abortion, children, marriage, or something.
Of course, now we're not implying by the commentary there on abortion that we're not providing for. In other words, our draft in effect leaves the existing abortion law the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
We
have new abortion.
Right.
But eventually we'll have to have it.
No. It's
isn't
the course ratio can leave it off by itself.
Well, it's now presently, isn't it, 163, so it will be repealed when this code is adopted. So, I mean, it can be left in the same language as it now is, but somewhere you've got to have it or you'll end up...
Yeah, but it's been compiled in a new location.
All
right. No. See, it's now in Chapter 435. It's not in the criminal code now. Abortion isn't.
Oh.
Well, we're not prohibiting a kid under 18 from smoking, but we are making it unlawful to sell him tobacco.
Right.
Is
it
for protection?
Well,
then he can sell it to somebody else if he wants.
No.
No.
As I recall, the intention of the
crime. He's over 14, he can commit a crime.
Why? What?
He's over 14, he commits a crime.
He's selling him himself.
Well, that's the kind of thing that could be covered as a miscellaneous crime if you want to make it a crime.
16-year-old what? Somebody else.
Buying
it.
Okay.
I don't think you want
to. No, as I recall, we actually, in subcommittee, I think there was it. The original draft was going to be a crime. We spread it out. And then there was only the sale.
Did I show you that?
Christian Science. I guess that's why I voted for it.
That's publicized.
He carried it to my father's five. So I said, they're pretty good.
Now, other statutes dealing with minors appear on page 31. And
I
These are, Don, would you discuss these, please, with supplementary commentary?
Go ahead, Ron.
166560. Well, how about abandoning refrigerators?
That will cover the miscellaneous offenses. We have limited draft miscellaneous offenses with really minutes of involved policy decisions on whether you want to continue them or not, but that is one of them.
Well, where is the draft? These are our last two meetings today. And what?
They are. They are.
No, because
you both.
The subcommittee on grading is going to review all of the drafts and then any miscellaneous offenses that you want to recommend.
Does the special subcommittee have authority to enact the miscellaneous offenses too?
Oh no, we don't dare.
We have authority to approve the draft.
Yeah, put it in the published thing.
Have the authority to report the commission and see if they approve your work. That's all we have.
I didn't think we had any more commission meetings scheduled until after the, on substantive stuff, until after the thing was printed.
Oh no,
I know. Well, that's right.
We're going to have to come back to the commission
with
after
the
subcommittee's finished.
Yeah.
Work, so.
Wow.
All right, where are we?
Well, on page 30, abortion is now covered in ORS chapter 435, and it carries penalty sections.
That's in the health code.
I thought it was in the environmental quality.
We've made the decision on adultery.
What's your decision?
It's great.
We have a statute on promoting divorce. That hasn't been continued.
Well, you get half the lawyers in the state.
I think that statute is originally directed at out-of-state people who do the mail in order to put the divorces. Page 31, crime for a minor to visit the house of prostitution. That carries, I think, a six-month penalty. That has not been completed.
Under
the prostitution article, the prostitutes and anyone active in the management of house prostitutes, of course, will be charged with under the prostitution article. Mm-hmm. All we're doing here is saying it's not a crime for a minor to be found in the house of prostitution when it's raided.
If we go back to the Don's going to have to buy his cute Playboy, and then he's going to have to attend the father and son night.
House of prostitution.
Of course, the commission had previously made a policy decision with respect to patronizing a prostitute. That was not going to be a crime.
Yeah.
Well,
they were afraid to call the law
situation, but I could be prosecuted.
The house probably
didn't
file a petition. I'm doing
it for you. Yeah, they're ample.
We have a statute prohibiting minors from misrepresenting a date in order to gamble. We suppose there's no cases under that statute.
What does it mean?
Well, they never leave their kid
with
me to take care of it. I
never did another
one.
Oh.
Thank God.
You've always wanted a boy, so you switched.
That's the history of my childhood. The statute on producing an infant falsely pretending heirship, if that is done with the intent to obtain property, that's
the only reason I can 16 without consent of parents, marriage, supernatural, and prostitution.
Most of that covers under other articles. Is that taking away a female under 16 for purposes of marriage? That would not be covered. Assuming no other
time. Pull it, Laurie, yeah.
Well, of course, how can you take a female under 16 for purposes of marriage?
To another state, or do you take it to another state?
Put down in Nevada and get married.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Only if you got a pair of parents along to certify.
But it's right, but there'd be a...
Well, yeah, we got child stealing, haven't we?
Right.
Yeah, we have a section under a kidnapping article.
They own child stealing.
Well, in effect, child stealing, that's not what we call it, but it's that type of statute.
Right. Stops the AD.
It's, we call it interference with custody, is what we call it.
What about this?
Custodial interference.
Support of parents, of course.
We haven't continued that.
No, but they relative responsibility still gets them. Lee Johnson will get them, similar.
Yeah, he has civil remedies, And also, of course, now under our non-support draft, the way that it's been approved, we have taken out alimony. In other words, failure to support a wife is not would not be a crime under this draft.
That's fair.
A wife or an ex-wife?
A wife.
I believe they also wanted to
pay out money to a wife.
Recognizing the feminist movement, of course.
But also should do away with divorce.
Yes.
Then there's another statute. As a matter of fact, it's two statutes that haven't been continued that I have some questions about. 167-235, the employment of minors in place of public entertainment applies to persons under the age of 18 who perform public dances, public performances. And then 167-237 makes some exceptions to that. For example, no alcoholic beverages are consumed on the premises, and without the permission of the juvenile judge and consent of the parents. But without continuing that, it would seem that it would therefore be legal for a bar to employ a 16-year-old go-go dancer.
Oh, well, you see it.
Huh? Why didn't you include that?
Well, did we have that originally under the endangering the welfare of the child?
Yeah. We discussed it. We did discuss it.
What was the content of your discussion?
Better to handle it by regulation.
Regulation?
Maybe certain instances where it would be okay. Isn't that it, essentially?
Yeah, but I think
they need to have some amendments outside the criminal code to compensate.
In other words, we may need to amend.
What's my chapter? 653. That statute was recently transferred from chapter 653, employment of women and minors, to the criminal code. I would recommend we transfer it back. I believe it virtually is intact. Because if it's repealed here, it's not going to be reflected anywhere.
But even though we're not making it a crime, we probably want to still provide for some control over that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And in one other section of the reading section, seemingly the birth of an infant. Do you have any?
Well, that's in the short answer for that kind of thing.
This was the situation where a fetus is found and it cannot be determined medically whether it was born dead or alive.
Not a fetus, a baby.
A baby.
Unless you can prove that it was born
alive. Not a baby,
alive.
Unless you can prove it was born alive.
Yeah.
And
I've had occasion to do a lot of research in this area to find that almost every case, even though you know it, the baby has been strangled by a cord or something like this, most all of them are reversed on the grounds that the state could not prove that the baby ever had lived before it was strangled. In other words, it could conceivably have been strangled during the cord put around its neck and choked and killed during the birth process. And so the only charge that you would have on a mother or whoever did this would be if they abandoned it, concealed the birth of it. They talk about it, law review articles on this, that the reason for the statute is so that there, this type of statute is so that there would be some sort of penalty, some way to get these people who do this when you can't prove that the child was actually born, actually lived before it was killed.
Are you going to perpetuate that statute?
No.
Well, I move that we include in our miscellaneous abstract.
Mr. Chair, what kind of people do this? Are they retarded people or mentally ill people?
Yeah.
You think that today's day and age, with the abortion laws what they are, and with all the other remedies, that the person had to have something seriously wrong, they waited until that long. Probably most
not
of them
really
are killed, Don. Most of them are probably killed after they're born alive. And they're born alive and then killed. But the state can't prove this.
Abortion laws in this state are only effective for 500 bucks.
This is where you find the baby in the wash room of the gas station, dumped in a towel dispenser or something.
As one case I read, the medical examiner from the Baltimore was testifying that they have anywhere from 20 to 30 babies wash up on the bay every year.
I think that
keeps like a long time. That, you know, wash up on the shore.
Well, we certainly should have a statute on this.
Whether or not they were ever, assuming that you can prove whose baby they were, something else you can't prove.
How do you prove whose baby?
Well, assuming that you can prove this, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, they don't maybe. Well, you get them in the abandonment statute.
Not if they were dead.
They were born alive.
Never became a person.
Now, that existing statute is limited to unmarried women.
Yeah, and this should be changed as concealing an illegitimate. And at least I feel that it should be included. I mean, concealing of any personal child, because what it can get at is primarily is killing a child after it's abandoned or killing it or allowing it to die. Whether it's illegitimate or not, then in one case that I know of, the mother is married, the child was not the child of the father. In all probability.
Not the child of the father.
I mean, not the child of the husband.
Wow.
So, I mean, no charge on her can be brought at all.
Well, Don, what, is this going to the subcommittee? These miscellaneous offenses?
Yes, it's going to the ad hoc subcommittee.
The ad hoc.
We had that section in the listing, didn't we? We struck it out.
Yeah, the subcommittee struck it from the draft.
The only we have mentioned the pool hall. 167-295 states that minors are not allowed to play pool in pool halls. And then it goes on to define a recreation facility and say and says they can play pool in a recreation facility. But it seems to me that's not necessary because it should be left up really to a matter of local option. If the pool hall serves alcoholic beverages, it's going to be controlled through the OLCC anyway. And if it doesn't, then it seems to me it's just a matter of local option whether they want their juveniles to play pool or not in the local pool hall.
Well, if there wasn't any law against it and they weren't serving any drinks, they could.
Right. I think it's kind of unfortunate what's happened. Some of them up.
You haven't been in Jordan Valley.
Yeah, I don't think the pool halls are a menace now.
You didn't see the music, man. That's where it all starts.
Those are the only ones.
Minnesota Bats Amendment.
All right, shall we go to gambling now?
Move we approve that. We approve the whole section.
Yeah. Okay, gambling.
Are we further or
again? Yeah, we are.
Why is the course again? What do we do before this?
Gambling?
Yeah.
Nothing. Nothing for the full committee.
This is from some subcommittee too. And by way of background on this, just a few general comments before I order. This follows in its generic approach by trying to define the terms. It follows a recommendation of the Model Gambling Act, but it is in structure and form more language from the Michigan Code and New York. They're both very comparable. Probably the biggest change that it would make in existing law is that it attempts to draw a distinction between a social gambler and a professional gambler. Now, the Model Gambling Act recognized some of the pitfalls in this kind of approach. And their commentary points out that they surveyed a large number of prosecutors, and they were fairly evenly split on whether or not they thought this was a good approach. Some of them feel that it's a loophole if you try to exclude the social gambler. This draft does make that attempt, and it attempts to bring the law on the books, which would become the law on the books, in line with what in effect is the practice now, and that is the social gambling is not an evil that is even frowned upon in our society today. It's technically a violation of the law, but the individual citizen who participates in a neighborhood poker game and that sort of thing is common knowledge, and he's not prosecuting another gambling place. And so this is the biggest single issue and the biggest single policy question faced with under this proposal, and that is whether or not you think that we should, first of all, try to distinguish between the friendly social game and the professional, and if so, whether or not you think we can do it, and this is an effective means of doing it.
Is this an inchoate act of the staff and the subcommittee? You say it attempts to do this and attempts to do that.
Well, this is one of the big objections, whether or not you can define your terms tightly enough so you don't leave a loophole. No, the subcommittee approves this approach and recommends it to the commission.
I feel very strongly, it is a difficult problem, but I feel very strongly that we should attempt to make the distinction. It is a great, I think it's always bad when you've got a law which everyone is violating and knows they're violating. Certainly I know there's a lot of district attorneys and law enforcement people that judges. They can't be members of clubs and so forth simply because
I think you're right. It's a farce the way it is.
Well, Mr. Chairman, here's the
Senator John Burns.
Right. I think there is a distinction. And I think that there is a good deal of hypocrisy as far as this particular crime is concerned. But I don't think that you can make the distinction in your statute and effectively continue to prosecute gambling. Now, I can recall the cases that I prosecuted in Multnomah County, investigated by your office, Don Corder was the undercover officer. And these people went out on 82nd Avenue and took an old abandoned building and set it up with card tables, and they were playing gin rummy in there, and these guys were just used car salesmen and people working along 82nd Avenue. But it was really control. It was really syndicated and controlled by professional gamblers. But the way the evidence came out, and the only evidence that the state had to produce, made this seem just a little neighborhood game of gin rummy, and the people were convicted, but they would never have been convicted had we been required to prove that this was something more than just gambling. And they went out into the St. John's
really
area.
Ever been effective at getting the undercover gambling?
No.
And won't this basically, I mean, what this does prohibit is that it won't turn Oregon into a Las Vegas.
No, it
and
won't.
Why don't we face up to the fact we've never been able to do anything with
but,
it?
But,
I wouldn't say if they're able to do anything.
I think we've been able to.
We haven't been able.
I think that this is one of those areas where you really use prosecutor's discretion, but Lee, the same outfit, they were in St. John's, they were out on Denver Avenue. But if we had tried, I guess what I'm saying is you want to say social gambling is okay. And I say that if we're going to go that route, then for all intents and purposes, we're just not going to be able to prosecute any kind of gambling.
John, in those cases, didn't it come out in testimony that the house was dragging money from the pot?
In some of them, as you know, there were several jury trials. I'd say in the majority of them, no, there wasn't that evidence.
Well, it seems to me you got away on the other side of it, John. The social evil that I think does exist is the fact that it's just like prohibition.
Well,
a lot of people who are basically saying the law is so.
What about the Elks Clubs in Eastern Oregon?
What?
Just a little social game.
Do they still do it over in Ontario, Cody?
No.
They're
still playing cards.
Pretty recently.
The slot machines are gone, aren't they?
No, they still play cards with their own machines.
And I think that's a reasonable distinction.
John, I'm not
you
so sure.
You say that you got prosecutorial discretion, and you don't in gambling.
I know, you got a statute that says that you got to prosecute.
This is one of the headaches of the
well, Frank, do you think we should leave the law as it is and make all gambling illegal and then just wink at the bridge party where they play for 20th of a cent a point, or if you invite a group to your house and they play poker. Which do you think is better, to attempt to do it this way?
I invite groups to my house to play poker, and everybody that's acquainted with me enough knows dang well they don't let me know when a poker game is going on. They have their games,
yeah,
but they never let me know. I mean, when I first moved to town, before they realized who they were, occasionally I get invited to one, but they know that they aren't to do that.
Well, which do you think is better, leave it the way it is? You know very well that women in your town play bridge for money. You don't prosecute them.
And the majority of like a lot of these charitable organizations, they want to have
bingo,
door prizes. They want to have a drawing of some sort. And so they call me, and so I tell them it's a lottery, it's a felony. If they check with their attorney first, they'd probably be better off. And it's one of the
headaches. Another thing it creates, which I think is very bad, because I've heard of instances of this, is where somebody's filed a complaint, somebody's playing poker. And so the police call the people ahead of time and say, look, there's some motion to raise it. I mean, that kind of conduct is what we're encouraging. And also, I think there is way too much discretion, and there is the irresponsible prosecutor. Unless to get the prominent citizen in town, or to get somebody else after.
Well,
and I don't see because you're really not stopping the undercover gambling.
So what are you suggesting, Ollie?
I think this is a sensible approach.
Frank, do you think it's a sensible approach?
I recognize it has some pitfalls in it, but I think
Don, do you think it's a sensible approach?
I do. I'm sympathetic to what you say, John, in these cases, but as a matter of fact, our policy as a police agency was that the only gambling we attempted to enforce was that with a commercial aspect.
That's right, had this kind of proof been required, we wouldn't have been able to secure convictions.
But you don't have uniform policies among police agencies. One of our cities arrests 4 or 5 young kids for playing penny ante poker.
Let me make another point.
You don't have uniform policies. Huh? I mean, district attorneys or judges or anything else.
Publishers?
Oh, well, no, I guess.
Another point, Senator Burns.
We have a situation in Portland on the licensed card rooms. And the vice office, the city police bureau, I think there's 57 or 58 licensed card rooms, like Kelly's and Duncan's and various places.
Sportsman's Club.
And there have been, for about the last 6 or 8 months, involved in a very kind of tough situation as far as the enforcement of the gambling statutes are concerned in those licensed premises. But the fact of the matter is, there is syndicated and professional gambling activity that goes on within the confines of those so-called licensed penny ante card rooms, and it's only because of a very vigorous enforcement policy by the Portland Police Bureau that they keep the lid on this and keep Portland much, much cleaner than Seattle has been.
John, what the hell goes on in Duncan's?
That's right.
Tell
that's
me that.
Right, but it wouldn't be back in the back room behind locked doors on separate occasions if the cops weren't in there every day clamping down on them every chance they got.
You know, one thing, John, I never understood about Portland is that they license those card rooms, like the Half Moon card room, and all over Portland, they license those places. There is a commercial aspect in that the chip is drawn from the pot, and those places continue to operate.
I think it's wrong to license
them. I do too, right?
Well, they're licensed not only in Portland, but in the state, a lot of them. Of course, the establishment that would drag the pot in a place
place.
That's
this
commercial.
Would be prohibited.
That's right, it should be.
Well, then I take it that if we enact this, then this would make illegal the Portland chargers.
Which are illegal anyway.
As presently operated.
As presently operated.
Yes. Now, if you want to just maintain a room in the back end for your customers to play while they're having their beer, you're not taking anything from the, not dragging from the pot, so forth and so on.
Aren't they illegally operating now?
Yeah.
Be the same
they
as
really
as the Arlington Club or the University Club or the Arrow Club or the Multnomah Club or any of the places where other people do the same.
I still think that the police, by frequenting these places and appearing, would still be able to hold down the type of gambling that you really want to prevent.
Well, like the Michigan commentators say, the Michigan commentators point out that private consensual card games and gambling is generally accepted in society today as socially acceptable, if not legally, and there's no point in preserving the fiction that it's undesirable.
Private consensual sex acts are okay, then you sure as hell can't really argue about four women playing bridge for a 40% point.
They're kind of both games a chance, aren't they?
Yeah.
Okay, let's
rush it.
Let's go through it.
May I ask another question, Mr. Chairman? I have the impression, without really knowing too much about it, that one of the ways in which they also control gambling in Portland is by use of the ordinance making it illegal to operate an unlicensed establishment. And they frequently raid these places. And the charge isn't gambling, the charge is operating an unlicensed establishment.
Like how the way it's happening.
Yeah, where booze is sold. And I take it that the city should continue to enforce its laws that way. Sure. Even with this draft.
I don't create a property right license.
I think the subcommittee did a pretty good job on it, frankly.
We'll be approved,
aren't we? You know, I think one of the most interesting social comments in this is this.
Is that the commentary?
This is in the definition. Gambling does not include bona fide business transactions, contracts, or purchase or sale of the future date of securities or commodities.
Might get a gamble on pork bellies, but lay off pork.
Okay.
All right. Which one of you? Are you Don or Roger?
Yes, it's my left. All right. Now, I think we should go to section 2 first on page 6, and we'll discuss these. We have so many definitions, really, that aren't going to make any sense unless we refer back to them in context. And section 2 prohibits promoting gambling in the second degree. And you commit this offense if you knowingly promote or profit from unlawful gambling activity. All right, now, on page 3, under subsection 8 of section 1, profit from gambling activity means that a person other than as a player accepts or receives money or other property pursuant to an agreement or understanding with another person whereby he participates or is to participate in the proceeds of gambling activity. Now, gambling is defined under sub 3 of section 1. Gambling means that a person stakes or risks something of value upon the outcome of a contest of chance or a future contingent event not under his control or influence, upon an agreement or understanding that he or someone else will receive something of value in the event of a certain outcome. And then the last half of that definition is to exclude insurance contracts. Now, the definition of promotes gambling activity is under subsection 9.
We don't get the players, do we?
And that means that a person acting other than as a player engages in conduct that materially aids any form of gambling activity. Conduct of this nature includes, but is not limited to, conduct directed toward the creation or establishment of a particular game contest, scheme, device, or activity involved, or the acquisition or maintenance of premises, paraphernalia, equipment, or apparatus, therefore, for the solicitation or inducement of persons to participate therein, for the conduct of the playing phases thereof, for the arrangement of any of its financial or reporting phases, or toward any other phase of its operation. A person promotes gambling activity if having substantial proprietary control or other authoritative control over premises being used with his knowledge for purposes of gambling activity, he permits that activity to occur or continue, and makes no effort to prevent its occurrence or continuation. So that's your, basically your first offense here, promoting or profit. And
Judge Burns?
I take it that the sentence on the bottom of page 3, beginning the very last sentence, a person promotes gambling and so forth, does not mean that not a definition thing in the sense that you say promotes gambling activity means that he engaged in conduct and so forth, and then you describe the types of conduct, and I take it that this latter sentence is intended to describe the nature of the conduct, let's say, of a landlord that would subject him to the definition. But I hope it would not be suggested that because you use the phrase promotes gambling, it might mean you sum up all of the disparate conduct that you've listed.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
In other words, what you've done there is simply describe another type of conduct that falls within the broad
yes.
definition and. And yet in terms, you say a person promotes gambling activity if...
promotes gambling activity.
Well, maybe I'm not making any sense.
No, I see your point. In other words, you think that the last sentence might imply an exclusion of everything else.
Yeah. In other words, if you... maybe you could just say, in addition, or something like that, just to make sure that the last sentence doesn't read all the rest of it out.
I see.
At least I don't mean to nitpick.
No, I can't remember on that one too. It says, for profits from unlawful gambling. Is that the guy who wins on the machines or wins the card game?
No, that's the guy that makes the tape before the
game.
He has to be acting other than as a player.
Right, I remember now.
Yeah, I see Judge Burns' point there, Don. Couldn't you insert something showing that this is an example?
In addition, or furthermore, or something like that. I don't know, just a drafting.
Yeah, problem. These are extremely wordy definitions. I realize that.
Well, I would think, Mr. Chairman, that this would be a
drafting
situation. The other comment I'd have on that same sentence is... substantial proprietary control or other authoritative control. This last sentence, as I understand it, essentially you're looking for the landlord or a landlord type situation. And I wonder if authoritative control is a very happy kind of phrase.
Authoritative control. Why don't we just say control?
Well, I'm not sure that would solve the problem.
Control or right control.
Yeah,
that. Well, it was intended to include instances such as, say, the manager of a hotel or a rooming house or the night clerk who allows a professional game to be taking place on the premises.
We have gambling activity defined.
may not have.
You find gambling, but not have to. Don?
Well, this is what I'm trying to get.
I think the friendly neighborhood poker game with the guy who's going to have it at his house, and he gets on the phone and calls four or five other guys. Is he?
The only section two.
Many of the crime seems to be from reading that he is, even though he isn't, there's going to be no hate that he's going to get.
Well, this kind of gambling game is not unlawful.
Well, but he just says,
the prosecutor at discretion,
That kind of gambling game is unlawful unless he does drive the car.
Jim, why do we have to say it's whether it's proprietary or authoritative control? Why can't we just say if he has sufficient control to prevent it and fails to do so?
Don, what is unlawful gambling?
Well, unlawful, I've defined unlawful under sub 12, means not specifically authorized by law. And the reason that's in there is for the simple fact that the only gambling that's going to be unlawful is the kind of gambling that the legislature specifically provides is prohibited. And because...
Which is in what section? 4 and 5, or...?
It's under... No, it's on page 4 of the definition.
Yeah, I know, but where is the legislature...
Each one of these prohibits something. If it isn't prohibited, then it's okay.
Yeah, but you see, this one is just promoting unlawful gambling.
Yeah, I understand.
Well, I guess we have to find out what's unlawful gambling. Now, but for promoting gambling in the first degree, it doesn't have to be unlawful gambling.
Where's that?
Under section 3.
Well, sure, because he violates section 2.
Okay.
All right. And Mr. Chairman, I move that on section 1, subsection 9, on page 4, we strike the words proprietary control or other authority, so that it would read, if having substantial control of the premise of being used, etc.
I would amend it by saying control our right to
No, it wouldn't be right where you were, because you wouldn't be confusing proprietary with authoritative. Why don't you just say having substantial right to control?
Right or duty to do something like that. Substantial.
Well, now, should that be substantial or adequate or sufficient?
No, I think it's control or right.
Sort of.
Having control or right.
Substantial control or right of control?
Just control.
Having control or right of control.
And leave out substantial also.
Mm-hmm. Well, if we don't have substantial, then it might make the prosecutor prove that he...
Substantial proprietary.
Yeah.
Accomplished his control.
Of course, if the premises are being used with his knowledge...
That's the key to be specific with knowledge.
Don't you prove control by proving his authority or his legal position vis-a-vis the premises? If he owns them, he's the manager, or he's the...
Yeah, I suppose he's the landlord, and he's leased it to somebody that he knows is going to carry on a gambling activity.
Okay. Would that be substantial control?
Well, just say control or right of control. Why fuzz it up with a substantial?
Be at least if they have any right to control. Do they have
any right to control?
Your arm hurting? Want a 5-minute break?
But at least.
Yeah, she's been working quite a while.
Good idea.
Yeah. No premises. I guess that's what everybody...
Right of control. Eliminate substantial also. Is that a motion?
I shall move.
All right. You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. Any further comment with respect to definition?
Well, does that make a motion to approve Section 2 in order?
Yes. You've heard the motion to approve Section 2. Is there a call for question? Call the roll.
Judge Grinch?
Aye.
Senator Grinch?
No.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Section 3.
Why'd you vote no?
Oh, I voted no because I think this is liberalizing it. I just think it's going to make it much more difficult to prosecute and enforce. Yeah.
Section 3.
And, Section 3 incorporates by reference Section 2 and divides two subsections, both of which are means to violate the statute. First one, engaging in bookmaking to the extent that he receives or accepts in any one day more than five bets totaling more than $500. Now, bookmaking is a term we define, and there are definitions also. It means promoting gambling activity by unlawfully accepting bets from members of the public as a business rather than in a casual or personal fashion on the outcomes of future contingent events. Attempts to get at the bookie, whether it's called betting on games or anything else. So sub one is bookmaking prohibition. Sub two, receiving in connection with a lottery or mutual scheme or enterprise. Now, lottery is defined on page 2. Lottery or policy means an unlawful gambling scheme in which A, the players pay or agree to pay something of value for chances represented and differentiated by numbers or by combinations of numbers and by some other medium, one or more of which chances are to be designated the winning ones. And B, the winning chances are to be determined by a drawing or by some other method. And C, the holders of the winning chances are to receive something of value.
Then the winning stuff that has the door price is still violating the law. As long as they pay something of value for the chance that they're doing.
Yeah, right. Because
well, in the first way, if he violates Section 2 of this article.
Right. And in other words, receiving in connection with a lot of it still basically the same as it now is.
Yeah, this retains the prize chance consideration elements.
That's a portion.
So the
opaquely.
I don't like her face.
the commercial aspect is not relevant to that situation.
Water balloon.
Yeah.
Well, you might say is there, but it's for a different purpose.
Supposing that you have a tea at which they're soliciting contributions to Lee Johnson's campaign, and they have a door prize. People come there and they contribute all the way from $25 up to $25,000, have tea, and each are given a ticket, and there's a drawing and somebody wins the door prize. That's a lottery under this.
Prize chance consideration?
Well,
I'm wondering.
That's also a violation of the practice. Well, the Supreme Court said no.
Boy, did you walk into that one,
buddy? Let the record show that the Attorney General expressed opposition.
Don?
Well, I'm trying to think. What is the question? You would have to receive in connection with a lottery or a mutual scheme or enterprise money or written records from a person other than a player whose chances or plays are represented by such money or records. Or more than $500 in any one day of money played in the scheme or enterprise. More than likely, we're going to fall within any of those provisions. It would be under B, I would think, where you would have to. I think that the answer would be yes, it would still be prohibited, but there is no way, of course, that we can legalize the lottery because of the Oregon Constitution. I mean, that'd take a constitutional amendment to. Because lotteries are the one form of gambling that's specifically prohibited by the Oregon Constitution.
Well, yeah, but it's one thing that we do is take away the, delete the statute that says the district attorney must prosecute, giving us tax discretion to take care of the limits and other things.
Well, if the Constitution says the lottery is illegal, it remains for the statute to say who is to be prosecuted as violating this constitutional provision. Now, if I read this correctly, it's the person that promotes the lottery and not the one who participates.
Not the player.
And so you have a typical situation where you've got the punch boards or the various kinds of so-called amusement devices that are in the taverns, which are really owned by somebody else, not the tavern owner or the bartender. And the cops come in, and some guy is playing this machine, and he gets paid off. And you don't get the bartender, because he got no profit from it. He didn't promote it.
Sure, you prosecuted under present statute.
Under present statute, but not under these proposed drafts.
You prosecuted Brady and betting him.
Oh, I think I just said if he knowingly promotes or profits.
He's getting a salary.
Well,
but
based
he protected him under the
obscenity
statute.
He's promoting it.
Or sub-9, I think.
Sub-9, he promotes it. There's a fact that it says the punch boards in these county taverns are, in my opinion, are not such a social evil as to justify a graduate of Michigan State University spending his time hanging around there. I recommend that particular.
Invariably, the guy that testified has got a master's degree from Michigan State University, and I think to myself, what in God's name is that doing sitting out there drinking nickel beers at a dressing tavern, waiting for the barmaid to haul out the what they call punch boards? They pull a little piece of paper out of it, spin it.
Okay. Yeah, Jim, that's so, but those are still organized crime. They're the lowest level, I agree. But it's the only way they have effectively any way to get at.
Your objective is they come from Michigan State?
Yeah, no.
Well, I shouldn't have said that. It's purely a diversion, Mr. Chairman.
Well, if your question was whether the player would be covered, no, the player isn't covered under any of this. But he's not covered now, as far as...
Oh, yeah, he's always prosecuted.
Yes, he buys a ticket.
He buys a ticket.
Whatever comes up. You prosecute a guy who buys a punch on a punch board?
Who do you give his proxy to this time?
Conducting the punch board, don't you?
See, he kind of gauges...
You can do both.
Well, you can do both,
but you don't.
You don't prosecute the player.
We have taken
the only people that...
He's always...
...the punch board, the officer.
No.
We have taken people, when an officer has observed someone else punch the punch board, and we've arrested both the party who owns the punch board and the person. Now, admittedly, the court suspended a $5 fine on the guy who was playing, but that's only where we had our evidence. Because the officer didn't do that.
Well, Don, where are we hung up here?
Well, I don't know.
I move approval of section 3.
Yeah, well, John mentioned that the player isn't guilty, but the guy that promotes it is, and I don't know if that's bad, is it?
I don't think so.
Well, all right, but I guess the thing that I was getting at, and perhaps it solves, although, you know, I have strong feelings about this, and I'm going to vote no. But I'm talking about the device, whatever it is, that is placed in the establishment and is owned and run by an outside third party. And the owner of the tavern is not there. And the guy comes in and he plays it, and the bartender is picked up and charged. Is the bartender, under our definitions, really the one that promoted and profited from that?
You have a full cash
on a slot.
He may be one of them.
He may be. Yeah. Is he, though?
Sure, he's one of the promoters.
Well, I must.
And,
I think he is, John.
What are the written records?
Engages in conduct that material materially aids.
You might have a defensive compulsion, Don.
Yeah.
This is, that's record that you're,
yeah, that's
your money, or your number is fine. That's primarily
important. We're not talking about that here, Mr. Johnson.
So,
all right, there's a motion that section 3, is it, be approved.
Three.
Call the roll.
Judge Burns?
Aye.
Senator Burns?
No.
Chandler?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Spaulding?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman?
Aye. Carried. Section 4.
All right, now the next three sections, 4, 5, and 6, deal with possession of records relating to illegal lotteries, bookmaking, or numbers rackets.
Tell me, how does this numbers racket work?
Well,
maybe John knows. I really don't know.
Country boy from Jordan Valley.
Yeah.
The numbers racket is one in which they sell chances every day. And
for quarters.
Yeah, it's very small. And each day a number is selected from a random group. For example, the
cash balance of the U.S. trade.
Yeah, or the number of a given stock on the stock exchange, or the number of some number in connection with a given race, or something like that. An arbitrarily selected event. And then that's the winning number.
Or it might just be the first three digits.
The last five digits.
You know, whatever it happens to be, however they decide to operate it. But it's something completely beyond the control of either party. Either party, right.
Who selects it?
Well, the favorite one of these
is the cash balance, the cash position of the U.S. Treasury on that day, and the last six numbers of it, or the last four numbers, or three often.
There aren't that many numbers in it, are there?
Oh, yeah. $79.31. And the Treasury reports it every day. So it's moved on the wires, and it appears in all the New York papers, a very prominent position, because the whole gambling operation was shut down.
You'll usually have, of course, your larger cities, you'll have different offices set up in different neighborhoods.
We're still going, Bryson.
To run that particular part of town. Then you have what they call the bag man, who makes the daily collection at each of these places and picks up the money.
The local alderman.
And
this is the backbone of organized gambling in the East.
Yeah. All right, I interrupted you. Do you want to go on and talk about sections 4, 5, and 6 now?
Okay, that's the adoption.
But
4, 5, 6 feet.
Yeah, that I know.
All right, now section 4 is the basic possession, and then 5 is an increased offense for the big time operator, or the one who really gets into the big time in a relative sense, because the amount, which is an arbitrary amount, is $500. Or if he has some records representing more than 500 plays or chances, this will bring him into an enhanced degree.
We have section.
Now, section 6 is a provides for two defenses. In a prosecution under section 4, for possession of gambling records in the second degree, or under subsection 1 of section 5, it's a defense that these are bets or chances of the defendant himself. In other words,
and only the defendant himself?
Right.
Well, is that clear in that language?
Now, initially we had in a number not exceeding 10, which is the New York language, the subcommittee felt that there wasn't any reason to limit the numbers if they're all his bets. There's
where do we get him?
Well, we don't.
Well, this means a guy that's making the bet himself.
What if a guy is also a runner and a bettor?
He's also a what?
A runner and a bettor. And he's got the records, and they also reflect his bets, but they also reflect other people's bets.
Well, then it wouldn't be a defense.
It doesn't say that it's to the exclusion of any other. It just says that in a prosecution under Section 4 of Subsection 1 of Section 5, his offense if the writing, paper, instrument, or article possessed by the defendant constituted, reflected, or represented plays, bets, or chances of the defendant himself.
Well, presumably, if he's a runner, he'd have the papers relating to bets
others.
By others.
Why do we want to sanction? Why do we want to sanction gambling in a bookmaking outfit?
Well, you're primarily dealing with the ghetto poor, usually, in this kind of a game. That's where it really gets us, and you're dealing with uneducated people who give their quarter and really don't see anything wrong with the whole thing.
That's why it's second degree.
No, but
that you can say the same about prostitution.
More than 5 bets, totally more than $500. That's not the ghetto poor in my mind.
Well, lots of these numbers, bagmen will pick up $500,000 a day in quarters.
Well, the bagman will, but you're talking about a defense. You're saying that it's perfectly all right for an individual to engage in this game. Well, it seems to me the guy that's in it that big is very likely he's a professional gambler himself.
Engage in the game. I've engaged in the game by spent 1 quarter.
And if you kept if you kept your ticket and they caught you with the ticket,
look,
by being offended.
The statute only makes it a crime to possess it in an amount to probably more than $500.
Well, I see.
The first degree.
Crime of possession.
For the first degree.
Second degree.
The second degree is.
We particularly want to sanction bookmaking, and certainly not for the guy that makes $500. So I want to move the strikes up to it.
I don't understand how you would
say.
Aren't you overlooking section 4?
Second degree applies to the player, to the normal little guy who picks up stuff around town, and to the guy who runs the service station on the corner and picks up those and takes in the $82 in the number.
Well,
section 5, as I understand it, deals with the guy, or applies to the guy, who works for the ring and takes his suitcase and goes around the service stations and collects all these slips, policy slips, and the money, and this is a cleaning establishment, or the guys who operate under 4.
Four, you get the players, is this right?
No, step 2. Well, you can get the player, but the player himself has a defense under 6.
Right. All the player's got in his possession is his own slip indicating that he bet that day.
You withdraw your motion. All of section 4 and the subsection 1 of section 5.
Well, I don't see why. I certainly don't see why you want to. Why you want to say the guy who's playing a numbers game, at least the big better, why you want to say he's not?
We're in great mood for you, Representative Carson.
Right.
Well,
take
a place, Mr. Cross, who never has been.
Well, I'll tell you, now at the subcommittee.
Lee, would you listen to Don, please?
At the subcommittee, our discussion on this, Representative Haas noted that under the provision of Section 6.1, an individual has a defense for gambling records he possesses reflect his own gambling activities, but he loses this defense if the records represent more than 10 bets. And you'll see where we've amended this section to exclude that. And the reason we did that was, Mr. Odell asked if the reason for the arbitrary figure in this area. He thought the result of such a restriction would be that the runner would just deliver the bets whenever he collected 9 of them. He favored deleting the language in a number not exceeding 10 in subsection 1 of section 6.
Does that answer your question?
No, it doesn't. And that,
my question.
The motion carried unanimously.
What is your question?
I'm with you, but I'm the one that's being consistent.
Well, now wait a minute, though. We're talking about in 4 and 5, particularly bookmaking.
Or policy.
And the numbers game.
Yeah.
And I don't see any reason that we want to sanction any side of that game, either the player or the guys that are promoting it. Because that particular form of gambling, isn't to me the neighborhood poker game.
Well, the policy is because without that defense, why the guy who goes in and pays his quarter and gets his policy slip and keeps it in his pocket to prove that he bet on number 931 that day has no protection. That's the purpose of the
way. Well,
of course, I'm not sure I'd state it in those terms, but it seems to me that it's simply a recognition of the fact that you don't intend to make it a crime for the little better to bet on these things simply because you know for good and well you can't prosecute them successfully unless you want to spend all your time on that one street.